And of course, our special guest, Paul Bannister, we're talking about his latest work, Tabloid Man and the Baffling Chair of Death. But we're going to take your phone calls as well. But we still got a few more stories, too, on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back. Paul Bannister with us, of course. And his, you've got a number of books out there, Paul, don't you?
Yes, I do, actually. I've written, I think, 14 so far.
Wow, good for you.
They're great for insomniacs.
Good for you.
Straight asleep.
So what is your next project?
Well, actually, I've got into historical fiction since I left the Tabs. So I did a half dozen books on the real King Arthur as a fictional character. You know, I set it against real events. Unfortunately, he didn't live long enough for me to do more than one book about him, so I had to give him a prolonged life and put him against the background of real events in Roman Britain. And then I've moved on now to a Crusader series. I've got three out there, and I'm on number four at the moment. That'll probably be a six-book series, too.
We're talking a little bit about the afterlife. You're obviously a believer in it.
Oh, yeah, I believe that your consciousness survives. So I'm not sure if it survives as, you know, an angel with golden wings, but there's just too much evidence of the energy that that drives us. There's too much evidence of it surviving. You know, we've got, I mean, all these stories, I mean, all these people aren't faking it. There might be one or two faking it, but not all of them. I can't believe that.
No, I agree with that.
And there's too much, you know, evidence where the dead have communicated in some way. George, you've heard these stories for years, and I'm stuck for words, really. It's just so obvious that the light just doesn't go out.
What do you think it is? What do you think all of this is all about?
It's an energy we've not yet discovered that causes life. We didn't know about electricity 200 years ago, except as lightning.
And it was there.
Yeah, and even now, you know, if you talk to a physicist, they can't tell you how to make electricity. They can only tell you how to tap into it. It's odd, but true. So I don't know. I suspect that there are layers and layers of existence. Maybe, you know, we're just in one universe and we're one skin of the onion. You know, maybe there's other universes wrapped all around us and things going on all the time. You know the stories that I'm talking about when I talk about time slips?
Yes.
You know, something happens. They've been going on for years. They're documented. The famous one, of course, was from the beginning of the 20th century, 1901, when two academic English women found themselves walking in the palace at Versailles in the year when the French Revolution broke in 1792.
They just kind of like went into another dimension or something.
They did. They stepped into it, and they said there was a curious. These were women of impeccable credibility, and they said there was a kind of a flatness about it. There was the air didn't seem right. That the whole feeling of the place wasn't alive. And they reported things they saw. There was a deserted farmhouse. There was an old plow there, which just weren't there in 1901. But they had been there 110 years before. And they saw a woman come out and do something and go back into the Petit Trianon, which is a little palace there. And they worked out later, this was probably Marie Antoinette. She was about to be taken to prison and executed, guillotined. And they picked up on her last happy emotion moment.
Were they time traveling?
Well, they stepped into it and then they stepped out of it. Yeah, they actually...
Without any machinery.
No, they were just visiting Paris.
Yeah.
And stepped into this, you know, exploring the palace at Versailles, or the gardens anyway, and something strange happened in the air. They didn't know really quite what it was. Everything looked unnatural, even unpleasant. The trees around the building seemed to become flat and lifeless, like a woodworked in tapestry. No effects of light and shade, no wind. It was all very still. And they felt very depressed and lonely about it all. And they walked around the building and came out the other side and suddenly were back in a group of tourists who were right there in 1901. And it's not just, one example. There's other examples. There's, from modern Liverpool, where the Beatles come from. And
yeah.
There's a street there which, as recently as the 1960s, had similar things. People reported seeing a delivery truck with, driving past with the name of a company on the side of it. And he walked across the street and he was going to go into a bookshop there and had a particular name over the door, which I've forgotten off the top. But the place had been closed 15 years before. And the delivery truck, that business had gone, it had gone out of business, earlier. They're spooky things, but maybe if there are layers of universe, maybe we could slip through into another time or era or something.
You ever hear the story of people are at a barn dance? It felt like
yeah,
the
yeah.
1800s, and everybody's there having a good time and dancing right. And stuff. And a guy comes in, and he starts dancing with some of the women, and they all noticed that he had cloven hoofs.
I love it, George. I love it. Oh, dear, yeah.
Great
yeah.
things like that.
I bet he was a good dancer, though.
Yeah, he probably was. Let's take some calls. Let's go to Louisiana. Angel's with us on Coast to Coast. Angel, you're with Paul Bannister now. Go ahead.
Yes, how are you? I'm here navigating the Intercoastal Waterway. I'm in Morgan City.
Oh, you are tugging. You've been on the water for how long now?
Well, I work 28 days and 14 days off.
Wow.
Well, the story I want to tell you about it happened in 91. I told you once before I was living in the Yucatan. And I was working for a man by the name of Don Trino Molina, a very famous person. He owns all the ferries that go back and forth from Cozumel.
Mm-hmm.
And I was on a flight from Miami to Merida, and I was in my captain's uniform because I was his yacht captain. And the pilot was going to the head, and he says, "Oh, you a pilot?" And he says, "No, I'm a captain." And he said, "Well, who do you work for?" And I said, "I work for Don Trino Molina." He says, "Oh, come with me. I know him very well." And we went into the cockpit, sat down next to him, and I asked him a question about UFOs. And he had told me that, as a matter of fact, I have a video of a location where a UFO lands weekly and interacts with the Mayan people, the peasants that lived there the folks who lived there in the Yucatan, and they interact with them every week. And he says he's every chance he gets, he goes over to trying to see if he can get more information about it. And he said he had it on video.
That's great.
That's incredible. But that would fit, wouldn't it? Because the Mayan temples and so on were mostly built along lines of power, ley lines.
That's right.
And, that's a very ancient civilization, and who knows what they know, what they knew. But they, if you take, if you look at a map of Europe and start plotting where the cathedrals are and where the monoliths and the Stonehenge structures are, you'll find straight lines running between them. There's a map of these power lines, lines of power. And some people suggest that, there are UFOs that follow them. Maybe these are the connecting points between the different universes. Who knows?
Paul, I'm amazed at your knowledge of these incredible stories. I mean, you're like a walking encyclopedia.
Yeah, I'd probably get them all wrong, though. But, there's something I was going to ask you, if I may, George.
Sure.
You were talking, about when you were working with Ed Mitchell, and he was confident, as I know he was, that we've been visited. Do you think that maybe we're getting a kind of a slow leak of information that there are other life forms out there?
On purpose?
Yeah. To avoid causing a panic by, you know, somebody shows up with a fleet of UFOs?
I don't think so. I think the leak that is occurring comes from people like the Edgar Mitchells,
yeah,
who are tired of, you know, the lies and the hiding of things. I don't know if you know Nick Pope at all.
I mean, the leak is coming from the ETs themselves.
Oh.
Trickling information to us to get us ready for the time when somebody shows up.
I think if they were going to let us know, they would let us know in grand style.
Yeah,
you know,
okay.
They would just plop down and, you know, the governments know something. Nick Pope, of course, who used to work for the British Ministry of Defense, handled the UFO files.
He
would read these things.
Yeah.
And something's going on. There's no question about it.
Yeah, of course.
Government's afraid to let us know. I just don't think there'll be disclosure. Not that way.
I think you might be right.
Let's go to Norman in my neck of the woods right now, St. Louis. Go ahead, Norman.
Hey, how are you guys tonight?
Good, Norm. Thank you.
I just had a quick story for you. I was helping a gal out a few years ago at a place near Lambert Airport. It was a old, I think, high school that converted into a residential care facility, and she couldn't get out of there very often. So they had an elevator that was two floors, and the elevator was kind of in bad shape, and it'd take 2 or 3 minutes, sometimes more, to get from one floor to the other. So she was at the end of the second floor corridor, and I went up to get her, and we're going out for dinner. And as I was coming back down towards the elevator, there's a little cubbyhole there. It was like a sitting area. And a gentleman walked out of there, and he was like in an Italian suit with a fedora, and he headed for the elevator. And so we're about maybe 50 foot from him. I said, could you hold the elevator? And we start jogging. And as we got towards the elevator, you know, she was in high heels, so I kind of let go of her hand and ran up ahead, and he got onto the elevator. But like I said, it took 2 or 3 minutes just to get to the first floor. And as he entered the elevator, I ran up and I was like, could you hold the door? Could you hold the door? So I stuck my hand in the door as it was about a foot open still. And it got to where my fingers almost got tensed. And
chopped off, yeah.
So I started hitting the button to open it back up. And by then she had caught up to me. And you're talking maybe 10 seconds after the elevator, you know, closed officially and then reopened. And I grabbed her hand and we went on the elevator. And I was like getting ready to yell at the guy and say, you know, why didn't you hold the elevator for us? And he wasn't there.
Yeah.
And we looked at each other and I said, what in God's name? Like I said, it took... Sometimes you would actually get stuck on that elevator, and they had to call the fire department in to let us out. It was really strange.
Norman, did he react to you at all when you called to him?
When he looked over, he was a middle-aged guy, maybe 60 years old, something like that, and he kind of looked.
You?
And then right as he was getting onto the elevator, he kind of looked over, but I didn't see his face real clear, except that you know, he was maybe 60. I was probably 30 at the time, and like I said, he got in, and I got to where I could put my hands into the open elevator.
Right.
So you're only talking a few seconds before it closed. There's no way that thing. It would take 5 minutes to go down to the first floor and back up at least, you know. And you're talking a matter of seconds when the door opened back up. And like I said, I was getting ready to give the guy an earful for not holding him after we had a dinner date, and we were late, you know. But there wasn't no one there to yell at. And we both got goosebumps and talked about it the rest of the night. So that had to have been a ghost.
Yeah. Well, they're there, all right.
I love that story.
There's a school in Menlo Park, Menlo School, and they have a resident ghost there. Her name's Carmelita. And all the kids have seen her, the janitors. The house was built, it's a mansion, Coleman Mansion. And it's now a school taking over the place. It was built as her wedding present. And they came back from honeymoon, back to San Francisco. And while she was unpacking, her husband's pistol discharged and she was killed. So she never lived in her wedding present house. But she is there. They see her all the time. She's got a green, shimmering, long skirt. And on occasion, I've seen her. I saw her with one of the teachers. And the kids will see her, and they'll be on two sides of her, and you can see right through her, and then she vanishes. It's just a shimmering woman shape with a long greenish skirt.
Have you ever been in a situation, Paul, where you were frightened?
Not really, no. No, I was startled when the in the Enfield Poltergeist house when this thing growled down my ear. But I think it's Dr. Hans Bender in Munich put it right to me. He said all this activity is a question of mental hygiene. And if you're, not allowing demons into your mind, then there's nothing they can do to you. But on the other hand, there's a psychiatrist in Santa Rosa, California, who insisted that demons were most of the cause of his mental patients' problems.
You never know.
You don't know, no. And he gave me some interesting stories about how he would talk to these demons through the patient and ask the demons, whatever they were, the entities, let's call them that, ask them very complicated questions, and he would get back obscure but accurate answers. Things like ancient Greek deities, or in one case they had a problem with the plumbing and they'd had plumbers in to look and they couldn't work out why they were getting hot water out of this and that and the other, and he had the wit to ask a patient who talked to his entity, and the entity said, oh, it's here, it's in this wall, solid wall, plastered wall. They dug into the wall and they found an imbalance in the valve that was buried in the wall that nobody could even see, never mind. So they have their uses, I suppose.
There was a story, this one was amazing, of a little girl who would constantly go up to her parents to tell her about her friend, her little play friend. And they figured out, figment of the little girl's imagination.
Yeah.
And one day their daughter came up to them and said, and let's just call little friend Lois for lack of a name, and said, Lois told me she was killed here. And the parents now started to take a very strange look at this, because you don't want your little 6 or 7 year old child to be talking about death and murder like that.
Yeah.
And she would insist, and she said, and she told me her bones are buried right here.
Yeah.
And so they called up a contractor and they came and dug up the floor.
Right.
It was a wooden floor, and there were the bones of a little girl. Unbelievable
stories.
It's hard to
discredit things like that.
It really is.
The other end of the scale is a lovely heartwarming one I heard about a young soldier who came home from basic training. He'd been away for a couple of months, I suppose. And he got home at like 2 in the morning. And he didn't want to wake his parents up. And his old dog was there. And he sat on the doorstep with the dog, and the dog was licking him and wriggling around and holding him and having a good time. And finally, he went off to bed, and the dog settled down next to the bed, and that was that. And in the morning, he got up, and his mother was delighted to see him and so on. And he looked around, and he said, where's Luddy? There was the dog. Oh, she said, we didn't want to tell you while you're away, but he died last month.
Oh, those are classics. Stay with us. We're going to come back in a moment and take some final phone calls here on Coast to Coast AM. Eric, truck driving in Tennessee, you'll be the first one, so you just hang with us. I'm George Norrie, and we'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And don't forget to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Don't forget ParanormalDate.com as well. We'll be back with more. Well, folks, we're going to have a great event in St. Louis on June 18th. Circle your calendar. It's at Lindenwood University. This is my first live stage show event in St. Louis. I'm really looking forward to it. I want everybody to come out. They have priced the tickets so low, they're almost giving them away. So simply go to this website of our affiliate, of course, 971 Talk in St. Louis. Let me give you the website, 971talk.com. That's how it looks, 971talk.com. And you'll look for a little section there that says George Norrie coming home. Click that, and you'll do a double click on the ticket sales, and there you go. It is June 18th. It's a Saturday night. We're going to have a meet and greet. They've got VIP tickets if you want. It's just a great time. Welcome back. Paul Bannister with us. His work, Tabloid Man and the Baffling Chair of Death. Paul, if you had an ability to jump into a time machine, where would you go, future or past?
I go to the past. I'm a sucker for history. And there's lots of things I'd like to see firsthand.
Any specific event you want to witness?
That's a good one.
I want to see Jesus.
You've got some good questions, you know, George. It's not fair.
That's what I want. I want to go back and see Jesus doing what he does. I want to see him raise Lazarus from the dead.
Right.
You know, that's
well,
what I want.
I'd probably like to see ancient Rome as it was. I've been to Rome a couple of times, and I have to tell you that when you walk down those stones of the Appian Way, you think that in this 65-mile stretch, I didn't walk 65 miles, 5,000 people were crucified in a day. They were nailing them to the trees after the slave uprising. You know, you've heard of Spartacus and all that stuff. But anyway, but you walk down the stones, you think, who's been on these stones? Who's walked down these things, you know? Who's been in these places? And that to me is, because I think, you know, I think that places and things retain some kind of memory. They say that, you know, for violin, for instance, if it's played a lot, it's a better instrument.
That's true. Wear it in.
And it's not the question of, you know, wearing it out. It's sort of infusing it with good music. Hopefully good music.
Same with a wooden salad bowl.
Yeah, right. It's hard to get a tune out of a salad bowl, I've found. But, I don't know. I just feel that stones tell a story sometimes.
Let's go to Eric, truck driving in Tennessee, as promised. Eric, go ahead, sir.
How are you doing?
Good, Eric. Hey, all is well.
Oh, yeah. So, when talking about paranormal and everything, I used to work at a prison unit in Texas. It was the Cofield unit. It's one of the oldest units in Texas. And then I had some strange experiences there. I was worked in administrative segregation when all the inmates were locked down for 23 hours a day.
Wow, that's a long time.
And, back in the early days, they wore the stripe black and white.
Right.
And I turned around and saw an inmate standing there and walking down the stairs, and I couldn't really believe my eyes. You know, I'm like, in the world, you know, there shouldn't be any inmates out. Well, the black and white stripes. I went to my lieutenant and I asked him, I said, do we have any, you know, we call them service support inmates that are wearing black and white? He said, no, you know, they haven't done that in years. Well, come to find out, I hadn't been the only one that saw that. I said, it's an old unit. I mean, we call it the part of it, the dungeon. That's crazy. But, I hadn't had really too many paranormal experiences, but my ex-wife, her mom, passed away, I think it was about a year before my mother did, in 2006, and her ex-husband was walking through the house, and she has just a little decorative, might as well call it a paperweight, but it's like a rock, and it comes flying across the room at him, and almost hit him. And she goes, well, that's mama, she didn't like him.
It's
bothered me too much.
But you know, you're right. It's back to what we talked about. You know, the stones keep the vibes. They keep those echoes. And most ghosts seem. I'm sure that George will agree to this. Most ghosts seem to have been from people who died under emotional circumstances. Either they're angry, or they're afraid, or they've got unfinished business,
yeah. Or something tragic, which is emotional.
Exactly. And as for things flying about, that's a well-known RSPK thing. When I was in the Enfield house one time, you know, with all those poltergeists, we were the people, there were like six of us in the place, and it was a very small house, and there was a sudden crack in the kitchen, which was tiny, a little tiny scullery, probably 8 feet long and 4 feet wide or something. And there's nobody in there. Nobody was in there. The door was locked and painted locked, you know. The windows were sealed. And I look in, and a scrubbing brush had flown from the sink where she said it was, where the wife said it was normally kept, flown across the room and hit the wall hard enough to cause a dent in the plaster.
Paul, have you ever had those experiences where you, let's say, put your keys on the table and you go for them and they're gone? They're gone. You can't find them. And then you walk around the house, you come back, and there they are.
Back again. Yeah.
It's like somebody takes them from the other side. They're playing games with us or something.
Yeah, it could be. It could well be. I had Uri Geller bend my front door key one time. We were just...
No!
Yeah, he just put it up alongside his forefinger, you know? It's my front door key. And he put it up alongside his forefinger like that. And he held it with his thumb, and it just bent around to follow the curve of his finger. He didn't rub it or anything like that. He held it with his thumb against his finger, and it curved around. I was most indignant. I had to stamp it flat before I could get back in my house. But that was Geller.
What did you think of Geller?
He's cheated on some tests.
Really?
Yeah. They caught him cheating on a photography test. But he's also done things that nobody could explain. The problem with him...
And they just think he's a good magician, you know.
He's got some magic tricks, certainly. I'm sure of that. But he's also got an ability. And the problem that the scientists found with him was that they couldn't get him to do things under their conditions.
Under the laboratory tests, right?
Yeah, with control conditions. And that frustrated them a lot. Now, I saw him in relaxed mode. It didn't matter. He didn't have to prove anything to me. And, you know, and I probably spent, I don't know, a dozen visits with him, you know, in the UK, in the US. We went down to Mexico. He was living in Mexico down there, so on. But anyway.
I thought he was in Israel, so he moved to Mexico?
He is an Israeli, yeah. He might well be back there by now. I've not. He was living in Sunning-on-Thames, just outside London, in an arms dealer's house that was so horribly ostentatious you'd have hated it.
I had interviewed him once when he was in Israel, and a Hezbollah rocket landed right by him.
Ah, yeah.
Unbelievable. Shane in Orange County, California. Go ahead, Shane.
Hello, George. How are you?
Hi. Good.
It was a pleasure to speak with you. I listened to your show, and I watched you over on Ancient Aliens.
Well, thank you. Thanks for supporting us, Shane.
There's many things that I'm surprised that you mentioned on the show, which is related to this show as well. It's a parallel universe.
Yes.
It was actually stated, I'm a Muslim, so actually it was stated in the Quran. It was a little segment. It says God created seven heavens and seven many earths, which is, when it was translated, it was saying that for example, there's seven George Nori. Every one of them have different faiths.
Oh, boy.
And
one might be enough, Shane.
I'm sorry?
One may be too many.
Yes. Actually, they were saying that's pretty much what it is. I think it was about seven. And, you know, as far as, you know, seeing things, actually there is a couple times, actually, Jesus Christ, also Prophet Muhammad, is the same, actually experienced that, and they saw somebody, and out of nowhere it was actually disappeared. It was one of the two stories that I don't actually remember both of them, but I know that they actually saw somebody was sitting by the tree, and when they looked again, it was nobody sitting by the tree. So it's been going on for thousands of years. But as far as I believe there is seven universes, and actually there's different faiths in every in every universe, like something else happened in that universe, and your life is completely different. You do something else in a different universe.
Sliding doors.
And that's when it was.
Well, you, Shane, you might be right about that. I mean, scientists over the last several years have been talking about parallel universes. I never thought I'd hear that, Paul. I mean, now they talk about it quite freely, don't they?
Well, that's right. I mean, you know, who knows what we've not discovered?
Did you ever come across any Bigfoot stories or anything like that?
Oh, yeah. People, I mean, I live in the heart of Bigfoot country here, Oregon.
Oh, you do, up there, yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, the Sasquatches, they're everywhere. You've got swamp monsters on the East Coast. You've got them in the Maine woods. They're in Louisiana, I believe. And the stories are always similar. You know, it's a horrible smell from the thing. And, you know, but we're just finding things out all the time that we didn't. The curlew sounds, you know. Oh, yeah, this has been extinct for 5 million years. And they're catching the things in the Indian Ocean. Who knows what's there? There might be some very expert woodsman, you know, in a fur coat. But maybe there's an animal out there. It's
far too many people are seeing way too many things.
That's really what it gets down to at the end, isn't it, George? It's,
yep.
There's such a body of evidence of all kinds that we can't rule anything much out.
Let's go to Edith in St. George, Utah. Hi, Edith. Go ahead.
But go back to 1937. I was 12, and we were going to an FAA meeting, and we had to pass a cemetery, and in front of us was a woman in a black negligee. She ran across the yard through the fence and went to the cemetery and disappeared. That was the last time we ever went on that road.
Yeah.
And there's been many times people have seen people walking around in the cemetery. And I'm 90 years old, and I was born and raised in Florida. And there's a lot of stuff in Florida that where we lived, the Seminole Indians used to be in the swamps. They built homes and walkways where they don't have to walk in the water. And Chief Osceola, he used to come to Tampa to bring his daughter, and she got malaria, and they walked back to Miami and never came back again to the fair.
Yeah.
Disappeared. Edith, you're the youngest 90-year-old I've ever heard.
I'll be 19,
George.
Good for
I'll
you.
I'll be 91 June 15th.
Good for you, darling.
I don't feel it. I don't feel it. I do everything with my kids. I don't feel it.
Good. How old do you feel?
About 30.
Good for you.
I love it. I've
outlived all my mother, my brothers, my sister-in-law.
Oh, yeah.
I have one sister. She's 70. And she's the youngest, and I'm the oldest.
Yeah.
But I don't feel it. I mean, I go and come just like my kids don't believe it. They don't. People believe I'm only 69.
Good for you. What is your secret, Edith? What do you do?
I eat anything I want.
Do you really?
I probably eat different than anybody. I drink a lot of drinks. Make a lot of drinks on the blender. Put bananas in there. Peaches and stuff and milk and carnation instant breakfast, put it in there.
Do you exercise? Do you work out or anything like that?
Nope.
You don't do that?
I sit all day long and watch television.
Do you smoke? Did you ever smoke?
Nope, never smoked.
Never
smoked.
That's the key.
That sure is.
But living in St. George, Utah, it's beautiful country. My children live here, my great-grandchildren. I have about 60 great-grandchildren.
60?
In Mississippi and Washington. And I just live one day at a time and be happy.
Good for you. That's the spirit, Edith.
Lovely stuff. Lovely.
I love that. 90 years old. She's going to be 91 June 15th, and she does act like she's 30.
Well, that gives her 3 days to get to Lyndon Wood University.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah. We had to get you out here for one of these events somewhere around the country. Especially, well, you know, I'm going to probably do next year Vancouver, Canada.
So, oh, lovely. I love the city. I love that city.
Oh, we do. I've only got about a minute left. I want you to tell us a little bit about your website and about your books.
All right, okay. Very briefly, I see you very kindly put a link up to my
website, of course.
On your own website. So it's bannisterbooks.com, and they list all the books there. Here's the thing: if you want to buy a book as a gift for somebody, and you just go through the website, let me know the person's name and so on. I'll sign it and dedicate it, and we'll take $5 off the Amazon price.
So cool.
So you can have your own personal, you know, copy for a friend.
That's the way to do it. Paul, keep in touch. I love talking to you. For Jeff DeRay, Tom Danheiser, Dan Galante, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasaur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Boros, and George Knapp, I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM, we'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.